now that I'm done pressing all the buttons over there. Good Lord. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Angry Nation podcast. I was getting the intro all screwed up. You guys won't even know what I did.
That backstage music was killer, though, bro. Seriously, I was getting into it. I just did a little dance, the whole thing.
I was like, what the hell is that? I don't even know what that is. Like,
I don't know. It's cool. Yeah. Countdown.
It was a cool countdown.
I was going to say, I was kind of nodding along, too.
It was all right there for a minute. So as you guys could tell, this is another one of those pre-recorded ones because I'm currently in New Orleans. We finally finished moving Mel's mom in, and we're heading home tomorrow. But we've got T with us today. Good old reliable T. He shows up when the rest of them just won't.
You know, there's winners. And there's people that ain't winners.
And there's everybody else.
And then there's everybody else. You're good, you're good. You're not, you ain't me. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And with us today, we have the lovely Trinity Sainer. How you doing, Trinity?
I'm doing good. How are y'all?
We're fantastic. We are
excellent.
Good. So glad to hear
you. What are you doing today, T? You working or what are you up to?
Man, to and fro. We're trying to get the whole goat, sheep, pasture land thing going. And so it's involving clearing off. You know, when you live in the hills, man, it's a different situation. You know, it's not like Indiana, Ohio, where you're like, hey, I think I'll raise some beef cattle. You know, here's my big flat piece of ground. Now, this here involves a little bit more into it. So we're working through that. You know, the Chicks Carlton is up and running. We're killing it there. And now we're to the next step. We've got to clear off pasture land. So, just to and fro, doing our thing, man.
That's awesome. We're up here, so. But we're getting ready to head out because we got shows in Kentucky to go do. I'm looking forward to that. So Trinity, what part of the world are you in? Where do you reside?
I reside in northern Kentucky. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I'm going to be seeing you then probably, right? Like.
I wish.
Oh, really? So, you're not doing none of those? Okay.
Yeah, no. I was hoping to get down to Hindman. And my dad owning his own small business. We travel around to some of the outdoor expos. And I'm actually going to be working an outdoor expo up in Columbus.
Wow, okay.
Yep, during the Hindman show. And then Bowling Green. I've just taken some time off.
It don't work. Yeah, I don't blame you. You got to have time off. So what's your dad's business if he's in the outdoor arena? What's he doing?
So his business is called Racked Outdoors, and he specializes in anything hunting related. So anything from bog tripods to outdoor edge knives.
Okay.
Pretty much anything that you could possibly need for hunting, he's got you covered. So.
Well, that's nice. Cool. Well,
yeah.
I like that. And you've got your company too. Well, one that I know of, the Made Ready Gear. What else do you do besides the Made Ready Gear? And we'll talk about what that is in a minute.
Right.
Do you have other companies too?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
So do you have other companies too? Other businesses there? Or is that the only one?
Nope. Made Ready Gear is the only business that I own. And it's a side gig, side job. My full-time job is actually I'm a care provider for an adult with special needs. So that is
awesome.
Yeah, that's the full-time job. And then Made Ready Gear just kind of came about in 2021 just from a love of sewing and absolutely being a gear junkie. So
well you're in the right club here, so because
that's it.
We are definitely gear junkies. So I was looking over the stuff that you make. I mean, and you know, they're kit bags essentially. You're making gear bags and stuff like that, and which is cool because I think the zipper bags and stuff like that are underrated in your ruck, you know, being able to keep your stuff organized and that kind of thing. I like it a lot. And I use a lot of the zipper bags like that. So I'm going to check yours out.
Absolutely.
Might order some of these.
I was going to say, I've got some that I can show on camera today. I've got a couple different
products. Break that stuff out.
Let's see them.
Oh,
let's
sure.
See what that looks like. And let me see here.
We've got the mini gear bag here. So it's actually perfect size for credit cards, driver's license, cash, and actually you can use them as a cartridge carrier for, you know, pretty much almost anything that would fit in here. So that's that. And then like you mentioned, the kit bags, this is actually the Medium 2.0. It's got integrated belt loops here. It'll fit up to a 2-inch tall belt. It's got the YKK zippers, which I really like. It's the molded plastic. 1000D, 1000D or 500D, depending on the pattern. Cordura, so it's water resistant. It's got great wear resistance. This size works great. Throw in like an Alpen headlamp. So yeah, that's the Medium 2.0. We've got the Large 2.0 here. Again, YKK zippers. You've got zipper stop here, little pull tab. You've also got, you know, a handle here or you can hang it. So that's the Large 2.0. And then here we've got a sit pad. So you can actually, it's got four of these webbing tabs, so you can attach it almost to any pack. Got orange for signaling, but then I do a lot of turkey hunting here in Kentucky, and I've actually taken this out. It's like a foliage green. It's actually a ranger green is the color on here. But yeah, with turkey hunting, you don't want to stick out. So that's kind of a multi-use bag. You can actually use it as a gathering bag. Just take the foam out. So that's the sit pad. And then I also up here have got a game bag set or a field bag set. It's great for dove hunting, squirrel hunting. It's got elastic here. You can just slip stuff in and out. Great for trap shooting as well. I sell it as a set, and the set comes with two of the smaller bags here and then one of the large, or I sell them individually. So, and I'm looking to expand my lines and thinking about, you know, creating some new bags, but I don't just want to put anything out. It goes through rigorous testing, and so the process is slow, but when I do put a product out, I want to make sure that, number one, it's a product that is going to meet my quality standards, but it's going to meet everyone else's as well, because if it doesn't work, then why spend money on it? That's my
exactly philosophy. And I like your sit pad. That's something, you know, turkey hunters always use those, but it's an interesting thing. And the war in Ukraine, both the Russians and the Ukrainians wear those. And it, to me, it's a brilliant move on the part of infantrymen to have one of those hanging off the back of your kit. So anytime you sit down, you're sitting on something dry and not in the muck or the wet, you know. And I've always thought, you know, more soldiers ought to wear those things. I don't know why they don't, but that's a great idea. If it wasn't blaze orange, I would like that. Don't put blaze orange on our kit. It's a different kind.
I like the two inch belt too. I like the 2-inch belt. I won't say who, but I bought some britches here a while back and went to throw my inner fighter belt on, and it wouldn't go through. I was pretty upset. Yeah. And I have all these pants, can't wear my warfighter belt. So the 2-inch straps, it's cool. Now, do you do everything right there? You're manufacturing everything there. You're cutting it, you're sewing it, you're putting it together. That's all you.
Yep.
Sweet.
Yep. Well, awesome. And so full disclosure, Mama does help me cut out fabric every now and then. So
that's a family event. Very much a family-run operation. Right.
Hang on. Sorry, guys. My computer's telling me it's not charging when it's hooked to the damn charger. So, T, if you take over for just a sec, man, I got to sort out this power issue. I'll be right back.
No, nope, you're good. You're good.
Carry on, man. I'll be right back.
That's the beauty. That's the beautiful part is it's not live.
Yeah.
So how long have you been manufacturing? You said this was 2021 that you started doing gear?
Yes, circa September 2021.
Okay. So, and how did you find yourself doing that? You saw a need for it. You were like, I need something to fulfill this need, because you're, as a big game hunter or huntress to be exact. I mean, is that what drove the manufacturing?
So originally how this all came about was, I'm fairly short. And I'm about 5'4" and all of my pants need to be hemmed, it seems like. And I didn't know how to do that. My mamaw had to teach me. And I thought, you know what, I can, now that I know how to do it, I can start doing my own stuff. And the first thing that I ever made was a pair of leg gaiters.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, yeah, you know, I love gear. And I'm pretty sure I can, you know, like I said, start doing my own sewing. And the first pair of leg gaiters that I ever made, I mean, they functioned, they worked. Up where I turkey hunt, we have a lot of what we call sticky ups. It's a very, you know, very professional term. But, you know, you'll be walking through the fields and just from where they bush hog and stuff, you know, they miss stuff and stuff sticks up. So yes. Yeah, we'd be walking through the sticky ups and your pants would always get caught. And so these leg gaiters that I made kind of, you know, helped keep all of my excess pant material in. And like I said, I mean, they worked. They weren't the most, you know, gorgeous of things, but they functioned. And so kind of told some people about them, showed some people, started making my own little gear bags, ditty bags, if you will. And a lot of people encouraged me to start selling the gear that I made. And for me, stepping out to do that, to put my name on a product to sell to the public, it was a kind of a nerve-wracking thing, because you never know how people are going to receive it. How, you know, things work for me, but, you know, what happens if somebody would happen to buy something and, you know, things happen, you know, what happens if it fails or if it, you know, but I finally did step out and I started selling my own things. And so far I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. So
wonderful.
Haven't really looked back.
That's awesome. Now, we should have done this to start with, but let's give everybody an idea of exactly who you are and what you're doing, because we're sitting here talking about Kit, but they don't think folks realize exactly who you are and what you do. So I know you're, and it's funny just by the story you tell and why you got into sewing and what you were doing, like the first thing you ever made, leg gaiters, because you're a big time hunter. You like to, you enjoy hunting. We've already talked about turkey hunting and other stuff, but that's the main focus of the businesses that you guys are in, is all in that vein. And it's your lifestyle. I'm not gonna say hobby, mm-hmm. because it's more than that. It's a lifestyle for you, isn't it?
It is. It is. So, my dad, you know, kind of, I grew up hunting with him. I don't remember this, but he tells a story, about the first time that he ever took me hunting. We went squirrel hunting. And he actually shot a squirrel and he wanted to let it, you know, die before we came up on it. So we waited about a half hour and he knew the squirrel was dead. So he went and picked it up and he was holding it. And he said, so, you know, what do you think about this? And apparently my response was, yep, well, he's a goner.
Yep. Well,
there you have it.
So, you know, we've always done things, you know, as a family that have always been outside, whether it's been camping, hiking, hunting, boating, four-wheeling. You know, we've always been an outdoor family, but hunting definitely is something that my dad and I just rally around. It brings us a lot closer. So I whitetail hunt, I turkey hunt, I have killed a coyote before. Been stalked by a couple coyotes, and then most recently I've been black bear hunting up in Maine, which
I saw that picture. It's impressive. That one's
my passion for sure.
Awesome.
The black bear hunting is?
Oh, absolutely. So up in Maine, there's a couple different methods of hunting black bear. You can actually trap them, which I've haven't done, but you can hunt them over bait, or you can do what they call a hound hunt. So 2021, I ended up going to Maine for the first time, and I did a bait hunt. I was unsuccessful at that. Saw a ton of moose, didn't see any bear, and just fell in love with Maine. It's beautiful up there.
It is. It is really nice up there. I've been up there a couple times, and I got a buddy that lives up there. He's a retired firefighter, and he's built a cabin up in Maine, up in the North Woods up there, and he loves it.
Yeah, it's awesome because, you know, up there, the timber companies own so much land. So technically it's private, but they do allow the public to come in and recreate on the land. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. And the people up there are just so nice. It's, you know, it's very much a outdoor recreation friendly state. People just respect your stuff. So,
but yeah. And the people up there are interesting. We were, when we were up there, I forget where we were trying to go. We're trying to get somewhere. And I stopped in a little convenience store, a little independently owned thing on the side of the road. And I'll never forget it. It was an old manor in there. He had the hat with the ear flaps on it. You know, he was wearing his overalls. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him, so I'm trying to get over here. And this, he knows shit, looks at me. He goes, "Well, can't get there from here. You have to go someplace else first." And I was just like, did he really just say that to me? Like, it is. That's no shit what he said to me. I was just blinking. I'm like, where the hell are we? Like, what happened?
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Very cool.
I don't know. I love it up there. So
it is beautiful. It's nice. I like it.
It is.
So you're in Northern Kentucky, and where do you primarily hunt? Is it Kentucky, or are you one of those folks that travels all over to hunt?
I don't travel very often to hunt. So mainly Kentucky. So mainly Kentucky. We actually hunt down by the Ark. That's in Williamstown, Kentucky. So yeah, it's Kentucky's fun to hunt. It really is. We've got a lot of different critters. So
yeah, my wife wants to hunt badly. And maybe this year I can figure out somewhere to get her to hunt. I got her a 4570 for anniversary a couple of years ago, but she's dying to shoot something with it. She can't wait.
Man, it's shoulder slayer.
Yeah, straight shoulder slayer. She had it out the other day. She was shooting it out in the backyard. I was just like,
I've seen her doing it. I mean, I give her props. I run a couple boxes through a 4570. There could be been alcohol involved, but not supposed to actually say that, but you know, only a drunken idiot would stand there and shoot two boxes of 4570 back to back. And I'm gonna tell you right now, man, my shoulder was trash the next day. And they say, "Oh, that's because you didn't have it pulled firmly into you." No, bullshit. That thing, it doesn't matter how firmly you pull it in there, it's gonna kick you stupid.
Yeah, it's gonna thump you for damn sure. Hey, Trini, you talked about bear hunting. I got a buddy out in Wyoming that he's gone to Minnesota, I think, a couple of times, and they ran him with dogs out there, and he's taking some that way. And he has cougar hounds. So he was – I don't know if he still has them. I think he does. But he was hunting mountain lions out in Wyoming. You know, ranchers would pay him to come out and run the cats off or kill them off, you know, off of their ranches out there. And that was always interesting. But he loves the bear hunting too. So, have you taken a bear yet?
I did. Nice. So I actually went up, last September, and I did a hound hunt, believe it or not, and fell in love with the hound hunting. Like, it is in my blood. nice. So yeah, I'm actually going back this September, for another hound hunt. And, it was, whew, It was crazy. It was nuts.
Yeah. Once that dog, once some dogs get a scent, it's on. Then the game is on. So
yeah,
we actually hound hunt here at the house. I have two fat hounds that live inside the house, and the bear come to our back door to eat them because they're so well fed. Actually, I have pictures of probably 300-pound black bear at the back door of the house, sniffing around, sniffing the dogs inside. You know. And then you, of course, you got Amber who puts oats out there and molasses and stuff, feeding these things. She's like, no, that's Yogi. He's part of the family. I'm like, yeah, whatever, whatever, man. That thing, I'm going to walk outside one day. That thing's going to be standing there.
Yeah. There's a lady down home down in Florida that feeds them. And she's got video of like of the bear pushed her door open. And like stuck his head in the house, and she like yelled at him and told him to get out, and he backed out. And then she got another video of him laying like on her stoop, half in her front door and half out, sleeping, just laying there sleeping.
Just yeah, the only like way that'd be happening here is it was a rug.
Yeah, that's it. Well, Florida's had such stringent laws on killing bears that it was almost impossible to even kill one in self defense and not be charged.
Really?
Prosecuted. Oh yeah. Like it was a big deal. I know I got a friend that killed one a few years ago. That was first, it was attacking livestock. It was killing his goats when he came outside, and he had a shotgun with him, and he was trying to run it off, and he's running at it yelling. Well, it charged him. It left the goat and came after him. So he had to shoot it and kill it. And they spent 2 years, trying very hard to put him in prison. You know, at one point they're even like, well, self-defense is not a defense in this case. You can't use it. But they finally just changed the laws. Yeah, they just changed the law. Like, even if you came across one that had been struck by a vehicle and was laying on the side of the road in terrible pain, laying there howling, you could not dispatch that animal. You had to call game and fish. And, you know, 3 days later, they might get out there. Even if you put one down that was injured like that, you'd get arrested.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. But they finally just eased up on the laws, it looks like. So you can at least shoot them if they're, you know, destroying livestock or in self-defense. Because I've been charged by two bears in the Ocala Forest. And I had a third one climb all the way up the tree I was in to my tree stand. Like, had his paws on the platform, sniffing my boots and everything, you know. But I'm sitting there, I got my bow in my hand and my phone. I was filming him. And I was sitting perfectly still. He climbed all the way up, sniffing my boots, and I was sitting real still, and I was just like, what are you doing? Just like that. And you could see the realization. He was like, shit, it's one of those, damn it. You know, I mean, he went down that tree a hell of a lot faster than he came up it. And when he hit the ground, it just sounded like a Volkswagen going through the woods, man. He just went that way. Like, there wasn't no trail. He just went that way. And
we've had some close calls. Like at Amber and I, when we got married very, very many moons ago, we got married in Gatlinburg. We had this cabin, you know, cabin outside of Gatlinburg, which, yeah, there's houses all over the place in Gatlinburg. You look at the picture and you're like, oh, this cabin in the woods. Well, they just cropped out the houses on both sides.
They got,
you know,
got that angle exactly right to not catch any of the other houses.
Yeah, to catch all the woods and the trees and like cool, yeah, you know, you we get there, right here. Of course.
You stand right here.
Yeah. Put a blinder on one side. You have this great woods scenery behind the cabin. But so we were there, and I had a good friend of mine, childhood friend. He's way up in age. He was in his 70s at the time and lived in Missouri. And he was he's a motorcycle minister. Okay. So him and his buddy, both in their 70s, they're like, I'm like, look, Lynn, come out and marry us. I think it would be awesome because I've known this guy since I was a little kid. And he's like, definitely, we'll go. So they ride over 700 miles to come marry us up there. So they're all sitting on the porch. This is we were there for a couple of days before we had the ceremony. And we had a black bear, small, you know, but when it stands up, it's taller than me. It's still considered a small black bear. And it's tearing the shit out of the garbage. You know, it just keeps coming back. And I come out there. I'm like, man, this bear is making me. So I'm sitting on the porch one day. We're all out there. We're sitting, and this bear, here it comes. And it starts knocking the garbage over. I run out there. I've got a pistol in my pants, as usual. I'm like, hey, bear, you know, get out of here, bear. And it's like, it just looks at me. I get a little closer. Hey, bear, you know, get out of here, bear. And then it stands up, and it starts walking towards me. And I'm like, whoa, bear, you know, like, you need to back off a little bit. And so I pull my pistol out. And I'm like, Luke, bear. And then my kids, you know, they're in the background. They're like, no, don't shoot the bear, Dad. I'm like, man, screw this bear. This thing's about to get popped right here in the middle of the street. So my two buddies, they come running out. Amber comes out. There is four pistols on this bear. We're standing in the middle of the street. Oh, and shit. All of a sudden, here comes a car. It comes up over the little hill. These two elderly Asian people are driving. The bear.
Oh, shit.
The bear ducks down and jumps right off the hillside. They don't even see the bear. But they see four white folk with guns pointed at their windshield.
Oh, they're like, shit.
Oh, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. There was a bear. I swear. There was a bear. You know, they're like, oh, I'm like, oh my God, we're going to jail.
I want to hear the story. Crazy, that man. They
it was
told.
Crazy. Luckily, yeah, they didn't call the cops on us, but I guarantee you, they went home and they're like, man, those Americans, a bunch of crazy asses, man. Don't go to Gatlinburg. Them people are nuts.
Like Trinity said, I'd like to hear their version of the story. Like, what was their version? Just riding through Gatlinburg, we come over a hill, and all the white people are standing there with guns. Like,
in our face, screaming, you know? Yeah, screaming. I mean, it was horrible. I'm like, I'm trying to tell them I'm sorry. We put the guns down. We're like, we're sorry. I'm so sorry. And they're like, no, you know, they're like, oh, man.
They didn't want to stop and talk.
Nah, they didn't want to stop. There was no conversating after that. They were all done.
Yeah. Well, Trinity, you're going to make it to Mountain Readiness, right?
Yes. Yep. That's it.
You will be there. All right. Yep. And in that, and with that thought in mind, we're going to run a quick little Mountain Readiness promo here.
I always appreciate that, brother.
Dude, that's what we got to do, man. We got to put this thing out there.
Shadow banning is a real thing, and I know it affects me greatly. One of the things we're doing to get around that is the new website has a sign up where you can get the newsletter. I highly recommend you go over and do that because you're not getting notifications from all the platforms. Even Patreon's not sending out notifications. But if you get on the mailing list, you'll get the newsletter and any important updates. I'm not going to spam you with a bunch of email. I'm damn sure not going to sell your email address. You don't have to worry about that kind of thing. But it's a way that you'll be able to keep up with what's going on. Because too many people are saying, hey, I didn't get the notification for this. I didn't know you're doing that. That's because social media hates me and they're not sending stuff out. So hit the link down below, sign up to the mailing list. You'll get the weekly newsletter and the updates that come out periodically. But if you want to stay connected, it's the best way to do it. Hit the link below and you guys know the drill. Be good or be good at it.
There's that awesome promo spot. The extended version. The extenders. You know,
that was a good. I did not know you had a newsletter now.
Yeah.
Until now.
I need to run these things a little more often than I do. I hate the shameless selfless promotion shit. I hate doing it.
But that was good. I liked it. He was like, and media hates me. I was like, right on.
They do. They do.
Yeah, they do most of us.
Yeah.
So Trinity, do you know who Steven Rinella is? I'm sure you do.
I do, yeah.
Okay, all right. Because, you know, I've followed Steve for years, for a number of years. I remember he did a black bear hunt somewhere, probably Alaska, I'm going to guess, because the bear that he took had been eating blueberries.
Okay.
And I just remember the bear fat was, sorry, I've been hearing things. The bear fat tasted like blueberries, he said. And they rendered some of it down and then deep fried chunks of the bear as they were dressing it out in its own fat. Like, I was just like, man, I'll bet that's some rich ass pieces of meat right there.
It's, I love bear meat. I'd never had it until, you know, I was lucky enough to get mine. And it is so good. So up in Maine, they eat a lot of berries and stuff up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually in Maine, for baiting, they're not allowed to use meat. So they'll use like donuts and Oreos and granola and stuff like that. So it makes the meat a little sweeter. And I absolutely love bear meat. And I've got my bear's fat. So I haven't rendered any down yet. So I don't have any bear grease.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You got to do that.
Yep. Yeah. So, but
And you know then, too, that like bears, like, what is it, 75 or 80% of them or something like that all carry meningitis and trichinosis. And so you've got to be real careful with bear meat, you know, as far as when you're cooking.
Yeah. So I've got some guides up in Maine. They're friends of ours. But they actually, Maine has not had a reported case of trichinosis, since I believe it's 1976.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. A lot of it has to do with, there again, what people use to bait. But So, and, you know, of course we cook our bear meat to, you know, the proper temperature and all of that, but. Yeah, no, Maine hasn't had a reported case of trichinosis since the
70s. I did not know this, though. I had no idea. I've never ate bear meat, and it was like we were on a really super high note. It was like, yeah, bear is awesome. Cook it in its fat. It's amazing. Oh, and you could die. Wah, wah, wah. I'm like, well, that sucks.
Something like 80% of the trichinosis cases in the country are a result of undercooked bear meat. So think about that. You think about how many people in this country eat bear meat. Not that many. And then 80% of those people with trichinosis were the ones that were eating bear meat. So it is very prevalent in
American
bears.
And just, I'm going to stand by my well-done steak-eating habits. I know everybody's going to hate me. They're going to be like, oh, my God, T eats well-done steak, you rotten piece of... Hey, standing by. Standing by.
Well, at bear meat, you better cook it all the way. So
yes,
all the way.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think trichinosis dies at like 160 degrees, so that's still, that's not that hot, you know.
No, that's, like I said, I think so I turned 30 in November, and in my family, our, you know, whoever's birthday it is, that's who gets to decide, you know, what they're having for their birthday dinner, and so I wanted bear tenderloin. And,
oh, nice, yeah.
Yeah, cool. So I think we cooked it at like to 160 or 165 degrees, and it was kind of like a almost like a medium well.
Yeah.
So very, very good. I mean,
you're only about 60 degrees on the low side compared to what I hit it with. So
60 degrees. God.
No kidding, man. Amber, she cooks a steak. It's like this is a true story. She drinks an entire beer after she's put my steak on, before she puts her steak on. That way they come off at the same time. Yeah, man.
Holy shit.
I want that thing just charred, man. If you ain't knocking carbon off, you ain't eating. Yes.
If you're not knocking carbon off, you're not eating.
Right back carbon off on the side.
You're God, dude. That's awful, man.
It is. But I mean, you know, it's amazing what the body can get used to. I mean, I love it. Yeah, you know, you get the body can get used to torture. It doesn't matter what it is. It burnt steak, you know, living out in the middle of nowhere by yourself, starving. It's all good. Works out great.
Burnt steak. Living out in the middle of nowhere.
I've caught more crap over having a well-done steak, and sometimes it's horrible to go to a restaurant with people because of that. You're all sitting there. You had a nice steakhouse, Brazilian steakhouse, downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, I've actually been there, you know, a high-dollar, $100 a steak meal, and, you know, this guy, medium, everybody goes around, and I'm like, well done. And they're like, what'd you say? Well done. The whole restaurant turns and looks at you.
Yeah, everybody, you hear that collective.
Yeah. I was actually told I was refused service at a fancy restaurant in Winston-Salem. Amber and I, we love this restaurant. Great steak. And it is one of the only places I can go that I can get a well-done steak that I can cut with a fork. I mean, it's amazing. Really? I don't know what they do to it. It is amazing. But she said, dry aging.
That's what, yeah. Dry aging.
Probably. Do it. But she said, they got Wagyu steak on sale. I want to try it out. So let's go have a Wagyu steak. You know, we get down there and she's like, yeah, you know, rare. I'm like, cool. And they're like, well, how would you like yours? I said, well done. And he's like, I'll be right back, sir. And they went back and the chef come out and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, sir, but we can't do that. I'm like, what do you mean you can't? You throw it on there, you let it burn, you bring it out. And he's like, I'm sorry, sir, we can't do that. I'm like, just give me a New York strip, call it a day.
You know? Put it on there, you overcook the shit out of it, and you bring it out here and I'll eat it.
I'd be like, look, my wife can go back there when she's done drinking her beer, then put hers on, and we can eat that shit.
My wife can come back there.
They wouldn't do it. It blew my mind. I was like, what kind of restaurant is this? You communist? What do you mean?
They're like, we're not about to start selling well-done Wagyu. Yeah. That's just not happening.
This isn't that kind of establishment, sir. This is
We have standards.
What kind of place do you think you're in, sir?
That was it. That was all she wrote. No Wagyu steak for me.
No Wagyu steak for you. Man, that's rough. That's rough.
That is rough.
I feel for
Trinity,
you.
The Trinity, when we started talking about coming to Mountain Readiness, which I'm super fired up to meet you and have you there as a part of the Mountain Readiness crew, it's going to be an awesome time. Especially I got to talk to, you know, Blackie's coming now too, and all this. Yep. You bring a crowd as well, so that's awesome. But I think I heard that you were a huge Weatherman fan, and I wanted to ask how did Chris and his survival book series, how did that bring you into the survival thing? I mean, what did that look like?
So I didn't discover Going Home until 2014. I was in college at the time, and I was commuting back and forth from my college to my house. And I don't remember what exactly was going on in the world at the time, but there were talks of, you know, unrest and protests and things like that. And I was reading the book, and in the book, Morgan ends up traveling, I believe it was, 200 miles back
250-ish, 250.
Okay. Yeah. And
250.
I was commuting about 20 miles. And so I'm reading the book and all of this is going on in the world. And I realized that I didn't have the skills or the knowledge to even get myself home from 20 miles. Nice. So my uncle and his friend,
your Kentucky showing. Keep going. It's okay. It's all good.
So they had actually gone to a bushcraft gathering that year. And so I was able to go with them and just absolutely fell in love with everything about it. The community was awesome. You know, everyone was so willing to share knowledge and tips and tricks. And so, but yeah, that reading your book got, you know, the wheels turning in my mind that, hey, I don't have the skills to get myself home if I absolutely had to. So, and
that's
then
cool.
Awesome.
After I went to my first gathering, I needed all the knowledge. And of course, you know, I think when a lot of people start out, you know, some people tend to get more obsessed with gear, and I absolutely fell into that. You know, you think this gear is going to make me better. And, you know, of course I'm a gear maker. So of course I'm going to say, yeah, you know, gear absolutely is essential because, you know, no one wants to, you know, carry all of their stuff, you know, in their arms. That's just not practical.
Yep.
But I think, you know, like I said, knowledge weighs nothing. So
it's really hard to lose it. It's real hard to lose it. Hard to, you know, I mean, you can forget, but But yeah. Once you've learned something, and if you've mastered it, you know, even if you don't practice it for some time, like the old, it's like riding a bike, you know, when you get back on it, you'll start to remember it quickly.
Yeah.
So I say the same thing. That's what we preach around here, training. We tell people to get training. We don't care where you go or who you train with, as long as they're, you know, a reputable instructor. But right. Go out and learn, you know, not just buy shit. You got to go learn to do shit. That's
absolutely
the difference. So,
yeah.
And that's a nice, you know, those two things are good companions of one another. You're hunting and now bushcraft and survival and stuff. That's all, it's one continuation of essentially the same thing. You're just broadening it a little bit.
Absolutely. Know? That's so when I went on my bait hunt up in Maine 2 years ago, we actually had the remnants of a hurricane blow through. And when you bait hunt up in Maine, you go out about noon or 12:30, and then you're out until dark. And then the Thursday that I was up there was actually when the remnants were blowing in, and it had been like high 60s, maybe 70s. And then that front was coming in, and I mean, the bottom just fell out. And so, you know, I'm not dressed, you know, appropriately for like a 20 degree temperature drop. So I'm sitting in my stand, winds just blowing like crazy. I, you know, get out of the stand and I'm cold, I'm shivering. And I had about 150 yard walk uphill. And if you've ever been to Maine, or if any of the listeners have ever been to Maine, it's not easy walking, especially going through the clear cuts.
Where all those snags are and all that shit the logging companies leave behind, their skidders tear up the ground, it's all rutted. It's rough to get through.
So I'm walking uphill through all of this, and I cannot stop shivering. And I know, there's a logging road that we had to wait on to be picked up. And I'm like, I've got to get a fire going. I've got to get a fire. Like, it was one of those things where, like, you know, that if you don't get warm, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. And the window of opportunity for that fire is beginning to close as well. Because you're going to, like you said, you're shivering, right? Well, what comes next? We're going to start losing manual dexterity. You know, we're going to start losing our fine motor skills, and you're going to be end up in a position where even if you had a box of matches, you couldn't strike any of them.
Exactly.
To build that fire. So.
Yeah. That's where, like you mentioned, hunting and survival go hand in hand, because up in Maine, there's a lot of birch trees and birch goes up great. So I'm like, I've got a great tinder source.
Yeah.
And I had a lighter in my pack. And then I also wear, I don't know if you guys have seen the.
I know those boys well. They're great. Dustin, they're great dudes.
Yeah. So I have that. I get about 50 yards from the road, and my guide, I saw his headlights coming down the road. I was like, oh, thank God. So my guide's name was Steve, and God love him, poor Steve. I made him turn the heat up to like 90 degrees in his Ford for 10 minutes. And he's just pouring the sweat. And I'm like, I'm sorry. but like you said, I mean, survival and hunting go hand in hand, because you never know when something's going to happen. You know, I had no idea when Steve was going to pick me up, because up in Maine, you know, they pick up multiple people. So you might be waiting 15 minutes. You might be waiting 2 hours and 15 minutes. You just don't know, because you don't get service up there.
Right.
So having that knowledge really is power.
Again,
it's just comforting to know, like, hey, I'm going to be okay because I know how to do this. Yep. So,
the bushcraft, I've always referred to that as like lifeboat skills. You know, that's because if I'm down to rubbing sticks together, things have gone terribly wrong. That means I've lost all my kit. Everything's gone to hell if I'm rubbing sticks together. But you should know how to do that, because you may find yourself in that position. You know, we always say plan for the worst and hope for the best, you know. Well, that's the worst case scenario, being with no kit, you know. And me and Alan T, we need to do this with you one time. My buddy John, Nikki, we would walk up on a mountain in Georgia with just the clothes on our backs and not even a pocket knife, and and do the whole thing, fire, shelter, water, food, the whole thing. And we filmed it. It's I need to find that. I'll put that link out again because it was pretty cool. You know, 48 hours on the mountain with no tools. And we had everything. We had a big lean-to shelter that fit five guys. We had a long fire out in front of it. We had we found a spring that was a seep we cleaned out. We made two like bowls in the sand, so you would drink from the first one, wash your hands in the second one, you know, farther from the water source. And we collected fruits and nuts and edibles that we could find. We roasted some white pine bark into chips, and that was dinner, you know. And but we go out with absolutely, like I said, we went out there with nothing, and it was kind of funny on the video. You can even see we're always going like, "Hey, who's got the good rock?" Like, because we had one rock that was kind of had a sharp edge to it that you could use eventually to cut through something. And so it was just, we're always like, "Hey, who's got the good rock? I need the rock, man." But it makes you appreciate that gear we were talking about, because if you are prepared when you wander out there and you do have the basics, you know, layering is a wonderful thing in the Maine woods, you know, but, you know, having that ability to make a fire, having something to, you know, carrying a tarp with you, I would recommend, because that way it's instant shelter. If it's raining and it's cold, there's, it's so hard to produce a waterproof shelter in nature.
Right.
It only makes sense to carry one. Just like it's one of the hardest things to produce in nature or replicate is a metal container, like, you know, a Tokes cup or a camp cup. That's something we don't think about. They're produced in China by the zillions and they're $5 at Walmart. But go make one of those in nature for me. That'll do what that'll do. That you can dig with it, you can boil in it, you can put it on a fire, you can use it as a hammer, you can do whatever. You're not going to create that in nature. So carry the stuff, but learn the skills to function without it. You know, and it'll just make you better in the woods all the way around. I mean, not that T knows anything about living in the woods, but you're muted. You're muted.
How about now?
Now you go.
That's me fingering around on this mic. I was saying I'm currently looking for a pocket-sized Allen key. Pack around
a with pocket-sized me. Allen key.
Pretty elusive, though. Get a hold of that guy. Pocket-sized Allen key.
That's like that's the 2024 version of a trunk monkey.
Right. You know? not to be confused with a crack house monkey. And
not a crack house monkey, a trunk monkey. You remember the commercials, trunk monkey? You ever see that commercial? Yeah. Oh, it was a trunk, got the fucking ball bat. But we're trying to engineer one now. It'll be a ruck. And when you unzip it, a little miniature Allen K jumps out and he puts your camp together and he does all the shit for you.
Take my money. And hopefully in Trinity there is a story with that crack house monkey, and they probably will show back up most likely, and so you will see firsthand it's a real monkey that showed up at mountain readiness last May and was saved from a drug dealer. And this thing, I don't know, man, it's pretty wild. I know Chris had his hand on his pistol, I think, most of the time around.
Well, because he's like, "I'm going to make it charge you." And I was like, "You better make it stop, too." Like, or I will.
It'd be a pet ass monkey. Yeah,
it'd be a class down in mountain readiness, you know?
Yeah. Hand to hand combatives for crack house monkeys. Yes.
The monkey class will teach. Sign me up.
Hey, man, teach you how to fling too. Dude, it was scary. I was a scary little dude.
It lived in a crack house and all it ate was bananas. Like, it's a monkey that will not eat bananas. Or wait, was that the monkey? There was one that was a pet someplace. I don't know if it was him or not, but there's another one that was a pet someplace that was kept in a very small cage its whole life, and all it was ever fed was bananas. And so it had been rescued, and now, like, if you gave that monkey a banana, it'd beat your ass. Like, it'd come after you.
That monkey there was fed crack and gunpowder. That's what that monkey
crack and gunpowder. Because my wife had been talking to these folks online, and they had asked her if they could come, and she's like, "Yeah." And so she told me, and I tell T, I'm like, "Look, there's going to be some folks filled with some animals that are going to stop by and visit." And T, you're up at the gate. That guy rolled up. What'd he say to you?
Well, no, we didn't know. You forgot to tell us.
Oh, we're out there at the gate.
We're wrapping up. We're wrapping up. And then this this kidnapper van with no windows in it and stuff like
rolling in.
Rolls in, and it was, you know, and it was one of those, like, you know, one of those that says like free candy on the side, you know, oh, spray painted on there and stuff.
That's 2024. It says free Wi-Fi. It says free Wi-Fi. You know, it's 2024.
Or to get tea, it says free ammo. You know, I'm like, I'm in. You know, but he rolls up. He rolls the window down. I was like, hey, what do you need, man? He's like, yo, I'm here, blah, blah. And I got a crack house monkey and a porcupine. I'm going to see Chris Weatherman. I'm like, what? He's like, yes, my crack house monkey and porcupine. I said, proceed.
Come on in.
What are you going to tell me? I said, I don't know. Whatever, man. Go knock yourself out.
Proceed. As you were, proceed. Good sir.
Yeah. Have a good evening.
Listen, I got to know what red flags, you know, what waves that red flag for you? Because if a crack house monkey and a porcupine doesn't do it, like,
there's not,
man,
a lot. Whoo. I mean, it's you know, we're pretty, what do you say about our, it's a very diverse, this is a diverse, I mean, it is. I mean, when we say we are the most diverse, we are. We got every aspect of self-reliance that you could possibly get. And game and crack house monkeys and porcupines.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
You cover know, all I mean, the bases.
I'm here for it.
It's a good time. It's never boring. Trust me. Like,
never boring.
Mountain Readiness is a great time. Any of the expos too, but we love Mountain Readiness because that was ours. But it's just so fun. It's to me, the best times are the evenings after the show for the day, when everybody's gathering up. Like, we're going to have some fantastic women bushcrafters at Mountain Readiness that you can meet them too. And Jax, and is Mama Wendy coming back? T, is she going to be there?
Not sure. Of course, Jax Janega.
Jax will be there.
Then we've got Kaylee Richardson, the Honeystead, will be there. We've got quite a few. Wanda Pride will be there. Yeah, She's doing a bunch of classes. Actually, I'm pretty psyched. She's going to be doing a gold panning class right there in the creek, doing the sleuth method,
oh, really?
Whatever it is. I'm going to jump in on that myself.
I should bring my sleuth. I've got a sleuth when I lived in North Carolina, we were on Wilson Creek, and that's where me and Little Bit spent most of our days, was down there in that creek running that sluice, awesome. Man.
Hey, we're going to do it there in that creek out behind the arena.
Yeah, I'll bring my sluice. I will, because sure. I'll leave it with you up there, dude. You can take it and play with it. It's a nice one, too. It's a real good sluice.
And I go out here in the spring every morning and just hoping to look down and see that big old nugget set there. I'm like, one day.
Well, I've got a buddy that has a what's called a high banker. I should see if I could get that from him and bring it up there, because you can set that up on your place. And then what you do is you go around and take samples of dirt and you run and you just dump it in and you leave it. It does it all itself. And you come back and you'll look at that trap and see if there's anything there. And then that
that's
way
that's the kind of gold panning I'm about. Like, here, hand this for me. I'll be back in an hour.
Well, you still have to pan it out, but it'll remove most of the stuff and get you down to just black sand primarily, and then gold, and you'll have to pan out the black sand and to collect the gold. But it's a way you can test spots to see if there's some product there. And it was a lot of fun, like that kind of stuff of going out. And I guess it's part of my personality of going out and finding gold like that, pulling it out of the ground myself. You know, it's like, it's like hunting. It's the same thing. We're going out and trying to you know, locate and collect the resources that we need directly from the land. And, you know, sadly, there's too many people on this planet. Everybody can't do that these days, because it would just, you know, they'd dry clean the face of the earth. There wouldn't be nothing left. You know, there's this war on ranching and farming, but there's also a war on hunting at the same time. And it's like, And now they're coming after private gardening. It's like, what do you want us to eat? You know, the bugs. I forget we're supposed to eat the bugs, but that kind of stuff starts making me nervous when you see it. Essentially, it's a war on food right now. You know,
I was going to say it's almost like a war on being self-reliant. That's kind of how I see it.
They definitely don't want that. They definitely don't want that. So that's a big threat to them. And speaking of self-reliance, folks, we've got some shows coming up. The first one will be the Bushcraft Homesteading and Preparedness Expo in Lindman, Kentucky, March 15th to 17th. And then the following weekend is the Kentucky Sustainable Living Homestead in Bowling Green. So we will be at both of those. And then in April, we will be at the SRF in Camden, Tennessee, the Self-Reliance Festival. So we will be at those three that are coming up here pretty quick. And then, of course, we'll have Mountain Readiness in May. And I think that's it that's planned at the moment. So, Jenny, did you ever get down to Georgia Bushcraft? You ever had
I go down there? Yep. Okay. So I went down there this past fall, and I'm planning on going back this fall. So I'll be down there. Cool. And I might be teaching. So,
oh, really cool.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep,
I'm going to try to make the fall gathering this time because they just did the co-op here, but I was otherwise engaged and I couldn't make it to the co-op. But
yeah.
I'll try to get down there.
I like the fall gathering. It's always a really good time.
Yeah. Anything that they do up there at Georgia Bushcraft is usually a pretty good time. It's usually really good folks. I got some really good buddies there that's the only place I get to see them. So I like to try to get by there whenever I can. You know.
Gotcha.
So where can folks find you, Trinity? How can they follow your hunting exploits and find your gear? And what do you want them to know before we get out of here today?
So they can find me on Facebook or Instagram. It's Made Ready Gear. I've also got an Etsy store. And again, that's under Made Ready Gear. I think what I would like people to know is that I'm no different than them. Not really. I'm just a down home girl that loves gear, loves making quality products. And I would really appreciate them supporting small business and a like-minded fellow outdoor enthusiast.
Well, you are like all of us, but you're also a little bit different in that you are a young woman who's really into hunting, and that's fantastic. You know, the number of hunters in this country has been shrinking. There's obviously the fight against hunting in general. It's really awesome to see a young woman like you who's this into it. Like, it's hunting's your passion, obviously, because you guys have businesses that go off into this as well. So it is a lifestyle to you. And like I said, it's fantastic to see that because it does give you a perspective most people don't have as far as what getting food looks like. You know, your food doesn't come wrapped in cellophane. Your food comes wrapped in hide, and you got to get that off of there.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, and I did forget to mention, I do have a YouTube channel. It's Saner Survival, and I've actually got, I recorded my hound hunt up in Maine last year. So that's actually on my channel if people are interested.
Nice. There you go. Check it out. Cool. So check out the YouTube, Saner Survival. So, and there's the link to the store. You guys can jump in there and grab some kit bags. She's got some awesome looking stuff in there. T, you got anything you want to close out with today, man?
Oh, man. Just glad to be here as always. Trinity, thanks for coming on. I'm glad we connected there. And
me too.
You answered, my messenger message there and all that stuff. A lot of times people are like, who is this weirdo sending me messages? No, it's awesome what you're doing. And you are, you know, just like everybody else. But like Chris said, you're doing something that's a little more unique and out of the ordinary of the box, which is cool. And so I love seeing stuff like what you're doing. Can't wait to meet you. And hopefully you can, get with a lot of the people that we got there and share your stories and spread that love of hunting and making quality gear. That's what we strive for with Mountain Readiness is people coming together and networking. You know, that's our number one goal. It's not just training. It's not anything. It's about coming together with fellow like-minded people and enjoying each other's time and learning from each other. So we're really looking forward to seeing you out there.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be there. Thank you for the opportunity and for the opportunity of being on today. I'm thrilled.
Absolutely. We'll get you on again because I just had an idea, Trinity. And when I see you in May, we'll talk about this and work it out. I want to see if if this fall, if there's a way we could work out to get you to take Mel, my wife, hunting for her first time.
Okay.
To bag a deer. And we'll see if we can work that out. I think it'd be cool. And I'll bring some camera gear and we'll film it. We'll film it.
It'd be awesome. Sweet.
It would be so good. Once you
make sure
you really understand. So
I want big bites of the liver, fresh out, you know, or heart, whatever it is.
Let her up. Eating.
Yeah, we got
her up. She'd slap. If I reached for her, she'd slap the shit out of my hand. Nah, that ain't happening. Well, Trinity, thanks for being here, guys. You know what we got coming up on the schedule. We are headed home to Florida tomorrow. So you guys know the drill. Be good at it. We will catch you next time.
Here we go.